Hi, this is Dr. Tom Rogers coming to you with a weekly podcast of the Common Sense MD. I've got a great show today for you. I've got a wonderful longtime friend and guest, Dr. Jenny Rose.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here.
It's so great to have you. This is going to be a unique presentation because I'm all pumped up about what you're about to do. Jenny, I remember Jenny back in medical school when she did a rotation with me, one of the best students I've ever had. I'm not just blowing smoke. She really was. And she's became a pediatrician, and she is one of the finest pediatricians. If I had small kids now, that's where they'd be going for sure. Maybe I'll get some grandkids, son, and I'll send them to you.
Send them my way.
But anyway, this is unique because, and the reason I wanted her on this show is because she is opening up her own private practice, something I did 18 years ago and have been very, very pleased with that decision, and it just keeps getting better. So she's going to open a direct care pediatric clinic, and I'm so pumped up because you've been out a while. Again, it's hard to do if you don't have some experience, but and we're going to talk a lot about my experience, and I'll help you give you some tips if I have any for you. I mean, you're way smarter than me, so you know, maybe I can't give you any tips, but maybe about the practice of medicine, I can do it as far as a business-wise thing. But anyway, let's just talk a little bit. First of all, tell me about your family, your kids. You're a pediatrician. Tell me about your kids.
Yeah, I have two kids, Emma and Cameron. Emma is 14 now, so she will be heading into high school this fall. And Cameron is 11. He will be heading into middle school this fall. So a lot of big changes going on for us now.
That's going to be, and you've got a wonderful husband, Kurt. I've known him since he was a kid. We grew up in the same neighborhood. So your kids are doing great. You're doing great. Let me ask you, tell me a little bit about the journey you took towards making the decision to do this, because it's a big decision.
It is. This has been something that I've always kind of dreamed of doing, of starting my own practice someday, but never really had the guts to do it until after I completed my treatment for breast cancer. I just really was struggling with the pace of insurance-based medicine and felt like I wasn't able to give the best care to my patients, and really felt like I needed something different for myself and for my patients. So I started looking into direct primary care and have a friend from medical school who is practicing direct primary care in Asheville, North Carolina. So she and I have connected, and she sort of sent me on the way of learning all about DPC. And I decided to take this leap of faith.
Well, we are so pleased that you're doing this, me especially, since I'm in that realm. And we're so pleased you're doing so well. A lot of prayer, and including from us, a lot of it. You're doing so great. You look so great. But, you know, you're as beautiful on the inside as the outside. You know, you're just a truly wonderful person. And that's what you want in a physician, I can tell you, empathy. You know, but anyway, so you're going to do direct care. Really, with what I do is cash-only fee-for-service. There's really three different models. You can do fee-for-service, cash when you come in. You can do direct care where you have like a monthly payment. And then there's concierge medicine where you do a little bit more. And I think there's some insurance billing as well with that model. But I like the direct care model. I think it's just a wonderful way to practice medicine, and you'll find that what I found out for me is that, number one, I'm a better doctor than I used to be. Number two, I enjoy my job a whole lot better. I'm 69 years old. I won't retire because I love it so much. Three, your patients will really want to see you. You know, you don't get patients in there that don't want help, and I like that about it. It's just, you know, it's just a wonderful way to practice medicine. The corporatization of medicine has kind of been a bad thing for medicine, in my opinion. You know, I grew up in a medical family. I saw it. I'm kind of like my dad. I do paper charts. You won't do that because you're young. I'm old. And I do, you know, just fee for service. I can remember my dad and I talking back in the 1960s about when socialized medicine was coming. And I still think it's probably coming, but in the meantime, we can do something better. And doctors are kind of, they're kind of independent people, you know, to be honest. We've been ratcheted into this insurance world, and it ends up that I think doctors start working for insurance companies. You know, I have a big T-shirt that says, I work for patients. So I hated being on a treadmill. There's no way at my age I would be practicing like I used to have to practice, but I enjoy my job now. So tell me, we could talk forever about this, but so tell me a little bit about the model you're going to do. What does a patient need to do to sign up with you?
Sure. So the direct primary care model that I'm using is this new movement that's happening across the nation. It's small, but it's growing really quickly. And it's made up of physicians who really want to take back the practice of medicine and go back to the roots, and that's the physician-patient relationship.
Well said.
So
that's the most important relationship in medicine, in my opinion.
I completely agree, and I feel like one of the things I really love about providing care to families is that connection that we form. And so with my model of care, the membership will include things like a child's well child visits and the necessary vaccines, developmental screenings, and education that we typically do at well child care visits. And I can schedule those for an hour if we need it.
That's amazing.
And it will also include sick visits. And, you know, for sure. Parents who are busy and their kids get sick, it can be a struggle to get them to the office, get them seen. And this should really allow convenient access.
Will you do any, like, telemedicine type stuff?
I can, yeah. What is really cool about direct care is that patients can text me directly. That's part
awesome.
The membership. So they can text me, they can call me, we can video chat, and they can come in for appointments in person. And there's not a limit to the appointments. They're not charged per visit.
I love that. You know, really, patients don't want to take off of work. They're already at home with their child. They're sick. And they don't want to have to trudge to the office, maybe get an appointment, maybe not get an appointment, head off to the urgent care or to the ER when something could be really taken care of over the phone or by Skype, don't you think?
Yeah, I think what's great about this is it allows me to use really common technology and common sense.
There's not much common sense anymore, is there? Common sense is uncommon.
Well, you know, when you work in fee-for-service practice under the insurance-based model, you have to generate a billable code for every visit. And in direct primary care, I don't have to do that. And so we can take care of things, whether they're big or whether they're small. I have the flexibility to do a quick ear check. You know, or I can see patients for an extended visit if there's something that's really been going on and they feel like they haven't been heard at their appointments, then we can take care of it and really dig in.
You know, that's so well said. There's a lot of family dynamics. You know, being a family doctor, same thing with pediatrics, but there's a lot of dynamics that you need to spend a little bit more time than the average doctor does with a patient. Again, it's not the doctor's fault, but half the time, a doctor is looking up a code to try to get reimbursement from an insurance company and then taking this stuff home like tasking. It's unbelievable what a typical doctor has to go through. And they get sidetracked. But with this, it's just patient care. But you brought up a wonderful thing that made me think about the doctor-patient relationship, because there's so many dynamics that go on and so many things that you can pick up on, like, especially with pediatrics, you know, why is that kid not doing too well? Well, you're really treating the parents as well. You know, that's the hard thing I think about pediatrics, because the patient at a young age really can't tell you exactly how they feel about things. It's usually through the parents. And you're having to try to figure this dynamic out between the child and the parent. Have you ever seen any helicopter parents, things like that?
I've had a few.
I bet you have. The other thing I wanted to talk about is for talking about that dynamic, because I know with me, I have a lot more time to spend with my patients, and I try to get to the root cause of the problem. That's what functional medicine is all about, which is the way I practice. Like a lot of times with autoimmune diseases, I find it's coming from their poor gut microbiome and what they're eating. But, we're talking about pediatrics today. So my impression of pediatrics, other than it's hard to practice, very hard, is nowadays you see so many obese kids and you see so many stressed out kids. You didn't see that back in my day.
Yeah, that's definitely an issue that we're up against as parents, as a society, and as a physician. So I think with regard to pediatric obesity, a huge part of the problem is diet. I mean, kids eat a lot of convenience foods. They eat a lot of processed foods, and we're learning more and more about how unhealthy those are. And so I'm really excited about my new practice model, because I will have a little bit more time to talk about how can we make some doable changes for your family with regard to what your kids eat. Because parents are up against a lot. Kids get snacks in school, snacks at church, snacks at soccer, and they may not always be the type of snacks that the parent was hoping for the child to eat.
I'd be amazed if they were. I mean, it's just incredible. Yeah. You know, raising two type 1 diabetic children, which is really what forced me into learning about nutrition. I realized I didn't know anything about it, and what I thought I knew was completely wrong. You know, another thing I found out about my practice that's evolved, it's crazy what will happen with your practice. I mean, it is going to boom so much, you better be ready for it. But what I've learned is that for myself, I have gotten a lot of ancillary people involved in my practice, and they just kind of come in, you know, and I have I'm tuned in to what I need. And, for example, I have a psychologist on my staff. I have a physical therapist. I have a nutritionist. I have a strength and conditioning coach. What else do I have? I mean, and I make use of other ancillary people, like physical therapists that just do pelvic floor type stuff. But it'll morph into something huge. And, you know, it'll be so exciting to be able to treat these patients and really get to the root cause of their problem. How much psychology do you think is involved in a typical office visit with a pediatrician? Because I don't know. I used to see kids, but now I just see real. I do see some teenagers, but mostly adults. And I treat a lot of adult ADD, as you know. How much that comes into your office do you think, or the way you used to practice, do you wish you had more time to kind of get into it a little bit? But if you're seeing 50 patients a day, it's impossible, right?
Right. So psychology is a huge part of pediatric practice, from newborns all the way through college kids. So, we screen moms for postpartum depression. We work on behavioral issues like sleep and feeding and toileting and all these different habits. And then as we move into school age children, we're starting to see more behavior concerns or, ADHD, learning difficulties. And we're seeing a tremendous amount of anxiety in kids right now. So
yeah. Why do you think that is? Because of social media type things? Or
I think social media definitely plays a huge role. I think it's so multifactorial. I think particularly because of the pandemic, kids were immersed in this anxious world. Everything mm-hmm. that was going on around them was feeling uncertain at the time. And, you know, that rubs off on kids. They can't avoid that. And so
they pick up on everything, don't they?
Yeah, they're still learning how to kind of cope with those feelings. And I think kids need healthy connections. They need healthy physical activity. There are so many things that we can do to help with their sleep and such that can really help remedy some of the anxiety issues that we're seeing in kids today.
That's exactly right. You know, I find myself, the more I practice and you get old, my dad told me this would happen to me. You're really honest with people. Do you ever find yourself like telling somebody, you assess the situation, you really know in the back of your head why this is happening to that kid. Do you ever just confront the parent, you know, and just say, hey, I think you need to hold this child back a year from school. Or my opinion is he or she shouldn't be in that school. Or do you ever find yourself just being honest with somebody like that and not be afraid to tell them?
Yeah, I think honesty is key in helping to take care of a parent's children.
Do the parents ever get offended?
You know, I try really hard to be on the same page with a parent, but I think also we know from studies that patient satisfaction doesn't always equate to the best care, right? So
right.
If a recommendation that I'm making to a parent isn't necessarily what they were expecting or what they were hoping to hear, I'm making that recommendation from the best place with their child's interest at heart.
Yep.
And I want to work together with that parent so that we can really help that child where it's needed.
I can't imagine anybody taking offense at you. Your demeanor is so good, which is so important and so lacking with doctors nowadays. I mean, you know, it's really, you wouldn't believe some of the stories that I hear, the way doctors will treat patients. I mean, it's unbelievable that they would say things like that to them. I mean, I'm not going to mention them, but it's just hard to imagine. I think doctors are stressed, and it carries over into the practice, don't you think?
Yeah, I think so. As I was going through my breast cancer treatment, I had to pace my work. I worked as I was getting chemotherapy, and I had longer appointment times. And I realized, oh, this is really kind of nice. Like I can do more with this. And as I went back to work and was attempting to get back to my full schedule, my pre-cancer treatment schedule, it just felt like my plate was getting crowded with more and more and more things. I heard a direct primary care doctor use the analogy that they felt that their exam room was crowded. Their exam room was crowded by the billing codes. Their exam room was crowded by the pharmacy benefit managers. Their exam room was just crowded by all these tasks and other incoming things, and they were unable to connect with their patient.
Yeah, it's very difficult. It's almost impossible in that scenario. You just really, it's very hard to be a very good doctor, in my opinion. Like you said, the doctor-patient relationship's the most important thing in there. But you're exactly right. The crowded exam room. The pharmacy benefit managers, they're ruining the cost of health care. I mean, I saw an article today. You know, Ozempic's something we use a lot in our practice because we do so much weight management. It's a miracle drug for a lot of people. It gives them a chance.
Yeah.
You know, people don't understand metabolism. You know, that patient that's obese is not lazy. You know, they may eat the wrong foods, but it's different. Their metabolism's different than mine is. You know, I could probably eat twice as much as they could, and they're 300 pounds. But anyway, the point is, those PBMs, those pharmacy benefit managers, did you know that they make 62% of the cost of that $1,200 Ozempic pen every time one sold? Those guys in suits on Wall Street are making 62% of the profit on every pen sold. And that's why that's why insurance won't cover them anymore, and the average patient cannot get them.
Yeah.
I'm getting fired up here. I better not start preaching, but I deal with this every day.
Yeah. I could get fired up about that with regard to asthma management for kids. I mean, the cost of some of the inhalers and... And the ones that I want to prescribe might be prohibited on their plan until they fail this one and this one and the other one. And it's just not good care for patients.
It's terrible. We have a lot of great medicines, but a lot of times we can't use them. And then your nurse is spending half the day trying to get a PA, a prior approval. I had a guy yesterday that came to see me and for something else, but he was kind of frustrated and he talked to me about it. He says, my grandson has type 1 diabetes. And I go, well, I can connect with that. He goes, I don't make a ton of money. I'm spending $1,500 a month on my grandson's insulin supplies. The parents can't afford it. So it, just like asthma, being a diabetic and affording insulin and the CGMs and the pumps, I mean, it's hard.
Yeah, it's very difficult, I think. And the cost of medications is so prohibitive for families.
It's unreal. Yeah. So, you know, as a physician, you're not only thinking about, you know, the best treatment, you're thinking, can this patient afford to buy that medicine? So it's a hard deal. Tell me about your nurses and what kind of staff are you going to have? Because that's important. I'm sure if you're hiring them, they're going to be nice. Because your staff can make you or break you. That person that answers the phone or greets them at the front desk. You've already chosen your staff probably. How do you go about that?
I love this question. So as I went into this, I thought I was going to be flying solo. I thought it was going to be just me. I thought I was going to be drawing the labs, giving the shots, doing it all. And that's how a lot of direct primary care physicians operate. It's mm-hmm. old school. It's like doctors used to do, right? You hang out your shingle and that's what you do. And some time ago, my nurse who I had worked with previously approached me and said, hey, if you have space for me, I think I'm interested in what you're doing. And oh, I was like, I am so happy that you asked. So my nurse, Cherise Lee, is an RN. She is incredibly talented at connecting with families. I think that is one of her greatest strengths.
Awesome.
She's amazing at drawing labs. She can make kids feel comfortable. And she's a parent to 5 kids. Two sets of twins.
Wow.
And so she just has an incredible amount of life experience. And one of her kids was born with special needs. And so she has just a rich list of experience that she can draw from that is really going to add so much value to the practice. I think parents are going to love it.
That is awesome. She's worth her weight in gold.
I'm
telling you. And then you get somebody on the front that's nice, handles the phone well, because you need to be friendly to people. These are your customers. You know, the way doctors have gotten now, they'll try to keep you out of the office. We want people to come in.
Exactly.
You know, it's just the way to do it. I want to touch on one more thing that you just mentioned. You've seen it on both sides, both as a physician and as a patient.
Correct.
And that is probably an invaluable experience. What did you learn out of that? A ton of stuff, just briefly.
Yeah, definitely. So really seeing things through the lens of the patient brought me a ton of clarity. I had one experience as I was going through cancer treatment. I went to go and get my next chemotherapy infusion. I was not thrilled to be getting chemotherapy, but it was a necessary part of my treatment. And as I went to check in, the staffer at the desk said, oh, I'm sorry, your insurance isn't covering your infusion today, so you can't get infusion. And I thought, you've got to be kidding me. They said, well, they haven't deemed that it is medically necessary. And I thought, well, this life-saving treatment seems medically necessary. So it turns out that there was a form that was supposed to be filled out and verified by my doctor that I am in fact needing to continue on the chemotherapy treatment. And so, boy, that was eye-opening for me.
It happens every day.
It does. And as a patient, you just feel so helpless in that. And I've seen it from the other side in being the physician. And you can feel kind of helpless there as well.
Yeah.
And I think that for me, going through the treatment experience really brought me a lot of clarity in terms of what my joys are about my work. I realized that I can't imagine my life not being a doctor. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't imagine not working.
I love to hear that.
Because it's just what I love.
That's who you are.
It's who I am. And it also brought to light a lot of the pain points that I was experiencing as a physician, and also those that I felt that my patients were experiencing. I would hear parents say, hurry up and get on the table. She has other people to see. And I never wanted that to be their experience. I wanted them to feel like they were getting the full attention during the time that I was seeing them. And so, you know, I think direct primary care is really going to give my patients an elevated experience where my appointments can run on time. And we can take care of everything they need. And there's not a surprise bill that shows up later. Yep. It's all transparent.
That's transparency. So important and so lacking in medicine. Mm-hmm. The surprise billing 6 months down the road. Oh, you owe $2,000 because your insurance didn't cover it. That's 6 months ago. You don't have it. What are you going to do? You're going to go bankrupt? I think it's the leading cause of bankruptcy is medical bills that you can't pay. So I love your practice model. You are going to do so amazingly well. It'll just shock you probably. But you're an amazing person, an amazing physician, and you've got all the bases covered. I'm so looking forward to seeing you grow in your practice. You're a very experienced pediatrician already. It's just going to be amazing to watch you do this, and I'm going to be watching because I'm so happy for you. But anyway, so thank you for coming today. Tell me when you're going to open. And again, we're going to put your website on here, and we're looking forward to putting anything we can to that will help you grow this practice, because I'm a believer. You're an outlier, which is great. You're just better. You have to be. And I'm so proud of you for what you have done here. So when do you start? And tell me what people need to do.
Okay, so I will be starting, my website will be starting up at the beginning of May.
Okay.
And folks can
go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's
okay.
Coming soon. So folks can go to my website, kind of check it out. And there is a link where you can click join now if you think you're ready to join. And you can go ahead and put in your information there. And then I'm planning to start seeing patients the beginning of June.
Wonderful. Well, if I was a kid, I would join. I'd click the button for sure. And if I had young kids, of course I will. And my grandkids, I hope I have a few soon, will definitely click.
I'd love to see them.
Well, Dr. Jenny Rose, thank you so much for coming today. This is so exciting. I'm going to get you back on here occasionally just to kind of talk about the new things because, you know, medicine changes. There's all kinds of new exciting things. We talked a little bit about biologics and all those mm-hmm. for treatment of dermatitis and all these problems we see in pediatrics. So I'm just pumped about, you know, learning more and, you know, seeing how you do. But thank you so much for coming in today. Will you come back?
I would love to. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Jenny. And we'll see you guys next week. Thank you.